This is Into the Garden, WDVR's very own garden and landscape show. I'm your host, Carl Molter. Happy New Year, everyone. I am going to introduce, though it's kind of silly the term introduce because he's been here quite a few times, is my fellow across the panel is going to be helping me out for the month of January, John Markowski, of the blogger of the Obsessive Neurotic Gardener and author of Perennials Through the Seasons. John, I think I turned your mic on. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hey there.
What's going on? Thank you for having me. I'm psyched to be back, although I realize every time I come, it is really cold.
Yeah, what is it with that?
When you're reading the weather, I'm actually over here shivering.
The show theme's playing. It's going to be one of those shows. I hope not. Let's think positively here. But anyway, welcome. Thank you for giving Phil Getty a break for January.
Sure.
He's hibernating in Solbury right now.
Oh, nice.
I hope.
Picked a good time to do it.
What's with the forecast?
Just hearing the number 2.
It's not good.
Is ridiculous.
Two, negative 12. After the negative numbers, it just doesn't make sense anymore.
No, this is a rough stretch, and I know hearing 100% chance of precipitation, kids will be home tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that could be a good thing, right?
Just sure.
More time with the kids after the holiday.
I don't know
if you took any time off. Well, thank you for helping me out, and I think we'll have a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, I know we will.
Okay, well, everyone, this is going to be a show of a mix of things. I have to, first of all, thank Deb and Steve of the Caravan for covering for me last week. They let me fulfill a wish of one of my daughters, going to Philly for the evening. And I heard you guys played garden-themed music for the hour, an extended caravan. So if you're out there listening, thank you very much. I did get to thank you in person, but I'm going to thank you in front of our listeners. So the look back show that was supposed to be last week, which I typically do, and that's where I play excerpts from the past year, we're going to play that this show, but it's only going to be a half hour because over the break I did get in contact with a guest I'm very excited to have on the phone for the later half hour of the show. Her name is Nancy Lawson. She's author of The Humane Gardener, Nurturing a Backyard Habitat for Wildlife. It hit the bookstores spring of last year. The book was mentioned in Oprah Magazine and The Washington Post, to mention a few. And it was on our Best Garden Book list of 2017, which was compiled by guests that had come on the show that I had asked for their favorite books. Nancy is also a columnist for All Animals Magazine, as well as the founder of Humane Gardener, and that's an outreach initiative dedicated to cultivating compassion for all creatures, great and small, through animal-friendly, environmentally sensitive landscaping methods. That's what we're all about here, aren't we, John?
Yes, I'm very excited to talk to her.
And she volunteers both as a master naturalist and gardener from her home in Central Maryland. So she's coming on for the latter part of the half hour. Okay, show song. John, you know this, we do a show song.
I do.
Have you heard about the Mummers? You're one of those that's out of the Mummers' sphere of influence.
Yes, I'm familiar, but only a little bit familiar.
It's Philadelphia has a New Year's parade every year, and it's basically populated by the Mummers. It's a German tradition that goes back to the 1800s, where they would go out on New Year's Day, dance in the streets, shoot guns in the air, and stuff like that. And fortunately, the guns are now over, but the dancing continues. And they marched. There was actually some debate whether to cancel because of the cold, or I should say reschedule to a later date. But they voted to march on Monday in that cold. And it's a long haul. It's all day. A lot of them are out there. And I have to think of these guys strumming banjos. They can't have gloves on their hands or, on these saxophones and trumpets. And, it's almost a full orchestra out there. These guys dressed insanely. It's a spectacle.
So did you go?
I didn't go. It was just too cold.
Yeah.
Too cold. But my hat is off to them. Well, that's going to be the show song today, is an album. I brought a vinyl album. The album is called, Happy Days Are Here Again, which is such a sunny name. I hope so. Even with that weather report, it's by the Furco String Band, which is one of the groups down there which march in the parade. And I'm going to play You Are My Sunshine. And bear with me. I'm going to get the vinyl up and running here. Okay, that was the Furco String Band singing You Are My Sunshine. Happy New Year, everyone. It's a little belated, but hey, it's only 2 days into it, and it still feels very much like a happy New Year, even with the forecast. Okay, if you are just tuning in, this is Into the Garden. I'm your host, Carl Molter, and I'm giving Phil Getty a break this month. He's an avid gardener, and I think he just wants a rest for at least for the month of January. So he's home hibernating, and I have to say, I have to really thank all the work he's done on the show for the past year. I've been listening to shows preparing for this half-hour segment, which is rapidly shrinking, which I was going to play some highlights, and he's been a wonderful participant. But anyway, I have John here. John, you're on the mic. Was there a phone call?
There was. Just a happy new year, and good to hear us back on the air. That was the message.
Oh, well, thank you, whoever called. That's
yes.
Great to hear. Okay, let's start with our first excerpt from last year. We're going to start. This is a show that happened back in January of last year. We had Steve Katarski and Scott White in. Scott White has a bonsai business, Bucks County Bonsai in Percy, Pennsylvania. Steve Katarski is a.k.a. Dr. Plants. He is a character. He came into the studio with a pith helmet on, and he assumes character. He has a YouTube channel where he talks about his love for plants. His specialty is orchids, so I thought he could come in and talk about his love for plants. So we're going to start on the light side.
Why even bother to have houseplants? A lot of people complain. They bring them home. They'll die right away. What but we still buy them. We'll go back out there and try again. Why bother with houseplants?
It comes down to one basic principle called the magic of plants, something that cannot be described, but something that we all feel. When you see the right plant growing well, blooming great, just looking like a miracle of nature, you're experiencing the magic of plants. And it's something that good does for you. It cures your soul. It eases your nerves, and it just makes this world a better place. The magic of plants is real, and it's something I think we can all agree upon.
And I would say by extension is caring for them in itself is an act of relaxation.
Well,
mostly.
For some of us people like us that love plants, there's nothing we'd rather do than take care of plants and help them out, help them grow, help them thrive.
Now, what are the challenges bringing plants home in our winter environments inside?
Well, I find there's one challenge for most people. That's remembering to water your plants. You can't let these things sit on top of the radiator all winter, turn dry as a bone, and expect that thing to be flush and green the next day. You got to just take a little attention to these things. Just give them a little look. See how it's doing. Is it dry? Is it wet? Is it dark? Is it cold? Is it baking on the heater element? You know, these are all questions you got to be aware of when you're taking care of plants. But I got to say, my particular favorite type of plant, and a lot of people have these in their homes, especially after the holiday season, is orchid plants. You probably got one for a gift. You probably have one laying around that you may have picked up at the supermarket. These are great plants to grow on your windowsill in your home.
You mean the phalaenopsis?
Phalaenopsis are an awesome way to enter into the world of orchids. But I have to say there's many other great orchids to grow on your windowsill in your home. But phalaenopsis are generally where people are introduced into the world of orchid plants.
Okay. And any other houseplants that are out there?
Personally, I like Clivia. I think Clivia are a beautiful houseplant. The foliage is just immeasurably beautiful.
But for durability, I mean, anybody can kill just about anything, right? But
yeah.
I think the jade plant is a pretty,
jade is the
pretty
ultimate.
Tough,
nice and easy.
Pretty tough plant.
It's probably the ultimate as far as it thrives on neglect, so it's does
yeah,
very well.
I guess generally if you're going to have a plant that survives the most are those that, such as the herbs and jades and things, that like it dry because it's lack of water that kills a lot of plants, and overwatering.
If you're not good at watering plants, get the cactus. Get the aloe plant. Get the jade plant. Mm-hmm. These things aren't going to die.
Well, I water my plants once a week, Sunday mornings, and that way I get a plant that can just handle that kind of regime, and it seems to work well for most of my plants.
See, Phil, you're smart because you have a routine. Mm-hmm. The easiest way to keep your plants happy is to do the same thing all the time. You find out how much water it needs, and then you just come back the same time, the same place next week and do the same thing.
Well, I did find a flaw in that concept is that I found surprisingly in the winter I was losing my plants more because the sun gets lower, the leaves come off the trees, and they started to bake in the windows. Ironically, you'd think it would be the summer they baked, but in my situation I had to watch it. So coming home in the middle of the day and suddenly rising, this plant's out there getting roasted. But you know, you have to check them, see where the sun travels across your window.
Very true. As well, in the wintertime, you are fighting against lower humidity levels. Your plants are going to transpire at a little faster rate. They're sucking up water, and they're losing that water really quick. Even though they may not appear to be growing so quick, they're still going through that water quick.
And I've been in some court cases for humidity issues, and those little trays that you put underneath, you put water in. I guess that helps a little bit, but it's really
That's
tough.
It's recommended,
it's tough to keep the humidity.
Yeah.
Unless the windows are dripping with water, you don't have enough humidity for plants, and then you wind up damaging your house with that much humidity.
Yeah, I'm always spraying water all over the house, and I've definitely ruined a couple floor pieces.
Okay, well, John, what did you think of Dr. Plants?
I liked his passion.
Yeah, it's serious.
He pulled me in.
Yeah, no, he's fun to have.
No, yeah, he was great.
And he apparently has grow lights all over his basement. He has a greenhouse. His house is just full of plants.
Yeah, you could tell. It's everything for him.
Yeah, so I thought that was fun to play. Okay, that was like the next excerpt I'd like to play was when we had on... Again, early in the year, this was also in February, we had Sister Miriam McGillis. She is the Order of Dominican Nuns out of Caldwell, New Jersey. She is the founder of Genesis Farm in Blairstown. John, have you heard of Genesis Farm?
I have. I haven't been there, but I know about it.
Neither have I. And she's an incredible lady. She explored some faith and science together and the meaning of things. And I thought this was worth, we're going to get a little deep here, and this is a longer interview, probably bring us to the bottom of the hour. So here's with Sister Miriam McGillis.
When you say instruments, I guess you mean things, you're talking about science and what it brings
us. Yes, like the Hubble telescope. The human eye has never seen, ever, in all the generations of humans who have lived for the last 2.5 million years of human existence, no human eye had the capacity to see the range of depth in time and space that we have been able to acquire because of these incredibly powerful instruments. They're really like lenses through which we see what we couldn't see without them. That has altered everything. But the truth is, Carl, that interpretation, that understanding has not been translated adequately at all into the culture as a whole.
Hey, Sister Phil here. I'm curious,
yes,
have you read Joel Salatin's book, The Marvelous Pigginess of Pigs?
Well, I haven't read that, but I've read a lot of his work, and I'm familiar with his work, yeah.
No, it's great. It's the title also has Respecting and Caring for All of God's Creation, and it's about running farms the proper way, you know, respecting the critters and not the factory farms and taking good care of our soil and such. But, yeah, it's a wonderful book.
It is a wonderful book because he gets the connection between humans and all of the communities of life that are in a place, in a farm. And he understands the essential intricacy and marvel of soil and microbes and the microscopic creatures which really make for soil fertility. And that allows plants to provide the photosynthesis from the, you know, the actually eating the sunlight and translating that into the life of the plant, which then is communicated to the animal, which eats that and then goes up the food chain. He's done a marvelous job of doing that and helping other farmers to get off the addictive treadmill we've been on for the last 50, 60 years of using chemicals to skirt the real truth of how soil and fertility and vegetation and animals really do cooperate with each other to create this miracle we call food.
That's it.
The miracle we call food. I love that. I guess I thought we would bring in, I read the story in The Atlantic on you, and part of your journey, you came across a piece called The Universe Story. I found that very interesting. I thought if it's possible to maybe touch on how that impacted you and what it is.
Well, let me say that the universe story is actually a narrative describing what happened for over the last 13 billion years as far as our instruments allow us to see as we look back into time and space. And two of the major thinkers and writers who helped to try to interpret that and make it available for non-scientists, non-experts, lay people like you and me. I'm not a scientist. My background is in art. They wrote a book called The Universe Story, and that has sort of become a phrase by which people identify, you know, what we mean by the universe story, although not all scientists think the same about that. Absolutely, they do not think the same. But these two people were instrumental in writing. They wrote that book. They were also very significant in shaping the context out of which Genesis Farm took its perspective. So when I say Genesis Farm teaches this, communicates this, it is coming very, very significantly from the work of these two people, Thomas Berry and Brian Swim. Now, Thomas Berry is a historian of world cultures. Brian Swim is a mathematical cosmologist. So he's the science, Thomas is the philosopher and historian. And they worked together over a number of years to not just tell the story with the facts or just the basic information of what happened, but to try to interpret it, because we, humans, are the universe in the form of a human. We're not like outside of the universe, or we weren't, you know, inserted into it. We emerged out of it from that perspective. And it's scientifically consistent with what most scientists would agree to. What makes their interpretation rather unique, but not isolated from a lot of other scientists, is that they believed, based on Einstein's understanding of matter and energy, that there never, ever was a moment in the entire story of the universe, beginning 13 billion years ago with the first explosion of energy creating the universe as energy. They hold that there was never a moment when that energy, which rapidly crystallized into elementary particles, which then later become atoms, there was never a time when there wasn't an interior dimension, an inner dimension, a non-physical dimension to those elements. So you have a physical and a non-physical aspect to everything that exists in this early universe, and it continues to exist as the universe expands. And it has been expanding for 13 billion years. And in that expansion, it's becoming more and more complex. So the story of what happened in that 13-year process is what's meant by the universe story, how the first generation stars in the formation of the galaxies have lifespans. And in our particular case, with the Milky Way galaxy, which is only one of hundreds of billions of galaxies, and this is a reality we never knew before, because we couldn't see. We couldn't see in beyond our human eyeballs. But now we see there are hundreds of billions of galaxies, and every galaxy has hundreds of billions of stars. And there was a first-generation star which imploded and actually created the solar system with Sun as a second-generation star. And Earth is one of the planets circling Sun. And Earth is is the universe creating itself in the creation of Earth, as well as all these other, whatever, stars and galaxies. But Earth has this unique capacity of being alive. And see, we didn't know this until the astronauts really confirmed it when they left the Earth and were the first humans to turn around and see Earth as it really looks. And that gaze has not ceased to amaze and fascinate thousands of scientists who are tracking its changes. And out of that gaze are saying things like, this is a living planet. It's alive in its own right. It's not a thing with life on it. It is alive. So that trees and animals and all of the living creatures that we just take for granted and think that they're just part of the background, that's Earth being those. Earth is being the tree, being the lizard, being the giraffe, being the dog, being the hawk. And Earth is being human. And so this revelation helps us to see that you, Phil, and you, Carl, and me, Miriam, We are Earth being Miriam, Carl, and Phil. And we have the capacity to think. And what we think is how we put meaning together. And how we put meaning together forms a culture and a worldview. And it may or may not be consistent with how the Earth really is. And so trying to communicate that we, as humans, have a deep responsibility to learn this story and to learn how it works and begin to revise some of our understandings, especially ethically and ecologically, about our relationships with everything else that exists. Right now, we're a disaster.
That was Sister Miriam McGillis, recorded from last February's Into the Garden. That's the show you're listening to. If you are just tuning in, we'll be right back.
A peanut sat on a railroad track. His heart was all a flutter. Along came the choo-choo train.
Peanut butter.
You're listening to WDVR-FM, 89.7 Delaware Township.
Peanut butter.
Into the Garden is sponsored by Sun 101, a full-service solar energy company since 2006. Providing design, installation, and system monitoring for residential and commercial solar systems. The number is 609-460-4637 and online at sun101solar.com.
Hey, this is Debbie Coy inviting you to join me on The Caravan Wednesday evenings from 6 to 7 p.m. You'll hear a mix of tunes from Van Morrison, Eric Clapton, Bonnie Raitt, the Allman Brothers, and more. So tune into the best little station in the nation, WDVR. Turn it up. See you there.
Welcome to the second half of Into the Garden with Carl and John. John is going to be helping me out for the month of January, and we're starting the second half hour of the show. Happy New Year, everyone. To those who tuned in and was wondering what was going on, I had played two excerpts from the past year, and unfortunately, we've run out of time. We need to jump now to community bulletin boards, and we'll continue our series started by Phil, the topical garden tips. So, John, take it away. What do we got?
The January meeting for the Delaware Valley Garden Club will be January 19th at 6 p.m. at Kelly Mack Interiorscapes, located at 26 Sky Manor Road in Pittstown, New Jersey, 08867. Clubbers will be making two planter projects, one wicker and one, excuse me, I don't know this term, kokidama. I'm going to run with that.
Sounds good.
All materials will be provided along with light snacks and refreshments. The cost for the two projects will be $60. All are welcome, but you must RSVP. You can do this by contacting Megan Casey at 908-730-7510 or emailing her at Megan, that's M-E-G-H-A-N dot Casey, C-A-S-E-Y, at edwardjones.com. Join Somerville's United Reformed Church for a 12th night celebration on Sunday, January 7th at 4 p.m., The Boar's Head Festival will celebrate Christmas story just as they did in an Elizabethan manner. The sanctuary will be transformed into an English manor with candlelight, banners, trees, and crests. The Lord and Lady of the Manor will welcome guests to medieval times when the boar was a symbol of evil and the king of the great forests. The presentation of the boar's head at Christmas symbolized good over evil. This is one of the church's beloved Christmas traditions with over 125 cast members, a choir, and instrumental music, including handbells, bagpipes, drums, organ, brass quintet, and harpists. Everyone is welcome to attend, and there is no charge for admission. Go to Facebook/URCTWELFTH Night, that's URCT 12th Night, to find out more.
Wow, that sounds like quite the spectacle.
Yeah, I think I'm going after reading that.
Yeah, yes.
I'm impressed.
Okay, so John, what do you have for basically beginning of the year tips? There's not much out there.
It's probably the quietest time right now, but I think it's a good time to take advantage of. I think first off, taking a look at your own garden design. It's really at its bare bones right now. One of the things I try to focus on now and remember is winter interest, because as the year proceeds, I tend to push that aside and focus on the other seasons. But now's a good time to get a feel for the bones of your garden. So I think I would highly suggest you do so. Great time for plant shopping online. In fact, I've been doing some today. There's endless catalogs, endless online sites to check out, but you can do so in the warmth of your home, especially this upcoming weekend with the cold hitting. There's nothing better than shopping for plants and looking forward to spring. Another item that I think people are probably involved with right now is the recycling of your Christmas tree. I know you can shred it for mulch, but what I like to do is I place it outside of my yard and actually allow the birds to nest in there. I've done so for the last few years. In fact, if I go back into my backyard, I can still see the remnants of our old Christmas trees from years back. So I think that's a better option than just throwing it on the road. Now's a chance to put out water for the birds. Of course, you have to make sure it doesn't freeze, but I like to make sure I'm refreshing it as it freezes. Get a chance to give them some water and some food.
Heated bird bath. Yes. It's another thing you can shop for online. I love ours.
Yeah, I don't have one. I need one.
Yeah.
Nice. Now's a good time to sharpen your tools, clean your tools. Clean your pots. I usually like to clean them with bleach if I can, just to make sure that you're not carrying over any disease to the spring. I also like to get outside and, if I can, brush snow off of tree branches or larger shrubs so as to not damage them. But I'm also careful not to walk in the grass too often now, because with it being frozen, you can damage your lawn pretty easily right now by trampling all over it. So I try to keep that to a minimum. If you're winter protecting any shrubs or trees, I think now's the time, especially before the storms really hit, to make sure those are secure as needed. The winds have been rough of late, so I'm sure a lot of those protections are coming apart. So to keep an eye on that. And I think the last thing I would suggest is, if you have any plants, specifically younger plants, smaller perennials that are heaving as a result of the temperatures, if you see that they've heaved, you can cover them in whatever you want to use for mulch to hopefully protect them and get them through the winter. I have a lot of problems with heaving perennials, so that's a common issue for me in spring. They heave right out of the ground.
Gee, interesting. That's something I really have very little of, but you plant a lot every year.
And I plant a lot of small plants, which I think are more susceptible probably to heaving. And I also try to jam a lot in at the end of the season. So, but I think it happens more than we realize. So it's something to keep an eye on.
Just mulch.
Yeah.
So. Just a quick tip, you can run certain pots, just clay, through the dishwasher with success.
Really?
Yeah, they come out really clean.
Oh, good to know.
I would just make it its own load.
Right.
I think the missus would be upset.
Yeah, no, I'm not taking my chances there.
Okay, John, thank you. Okay, we are going to have I'm going to call out and connect up with our guest, Nancy Lawson. She's going to be speaking this Sunday at Bowman's Wildflower Preserve, their winter speaker series. She is the author of The Humane Gardener, Nurturing a Backyard Habitat for Wildlife, which hit the bookstores last spring. And it was on our Best to Garden book of 2017's list, which our show guests put together for us. She is a columnist for All Animals magazine, and she volunteers both as a master naturalist and master gardener from her home in central Maryland. So I'm going to be calling her. While I'm calling her, I'm going to play one more little tidbit from last year, real silly. It was from our campfire show when I was on vacation. I sat around the campfire, and probably for the first time on radio, like in 30, 40 years, we sang this Campfire Girl song. I'm sure you know the Campfire Girl song.
Oh, yeah, one of my faves.
It's just a little bit of silliness while I call, get Nancy on the line. So everyone sit back And we're going to bring on Nancy.
Now, Mary, you sang... You sang a
America
the Beautiful. Yeah. You just belted that out without any provocation when we did the last pre-recorded show. So I thought you could help me with this very special song. And you have the lyrics, right?
I do.
It's the Campfire Girl song.
Yeah, I'll sit back and play guitar. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on guitar.
He's got a beautiful voice. Okay. We have to sing it in the right key, so we won't start.
I'm going to let you, Phil, you have the option of singing along. And I just hope I won't break any equipment when I sing. So should we do and a one and a two? Okay. Sing around the campfire. Join the campfire girls. Join the laughter. Join the fun. It's a wonderful time for everyone. It's a busy day, and when it's done, what fun to sing around the campfire. Neath the moon above. Sing wa-hello, sing wa-hello, work, health,
love.
Jeez, the Campfire Girl song, yeah. First.
Sing wa-hello, what's that?
We have no idea.
This is probably the first time this song's ever been sung, especially on the air.
Okay, pardon a little silliness here. I should have Nancy Lawson, who I just introduced, on the line. Nancy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hello.
Oh, whew. It's been one of those shows, Nancy. And John's looking at me. I don't think he's going to be able to participate in the conversation because his headphones aren't working. So it's just going to be you and me. But anyway, Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I thought we would start with a little background. Obviously, you're quite an accomplished journalist, author, and speaker. How did that come about?
How did the book come about?
Well, that's your background. I'm curious. Did you were you into gardening and nature as a child? That typically some people yes, some people no. Comes later.
Well, actually, my father is a plant pathologist, and so I was always around plants, although. I wasn't that interested in sort of the cultivated gardens as a kid, but I was interested in being in the woods a lot, being in nature. And what got me specifically more down this path that I'm on now was when I worked at the Humane Society of the United States. In 1998, I started there, and I worked there for about 16 years. And pretty early on there, I started to notice that there were certain plant-animal interactions that both the animal people and the plant people weren't really paying that much attention to. And one of them was the issue of geese. And a lot of people who live around lakes get very upset with geese congregations there. And one of the really interesting solutions for that is to not mow everything down along the lake, because geese really like a straight sight line to the water when they're molting and when they're nesting in the summer. They can't fly very well, and they can escape quickly that way. And so there was a lot of experimentation back then in the late 90s by landscape designers to add natural buffers along the waterways, and it actually worked, and yet communities were still calling in the federal government to gas geese en masse and kill them for, you know, setting up shop in their backyards. And I just started to think about ways that we could actually improve the lives of all of us and help prevent suffering of animals through better management of our landscapes.
So how did that then morph into the idea of you creating a tome about basically a humane garden for the rest of the denizens out there?
I was actually a very traditional gardener when I started here at my house about 20 years ago. And I liked the cottage garden look, and I would very intensively grow annuals in the basement, and I grew thousands of plants, vegetables, and I started to notice at a certain point, you know, my 2-acre yard that I had inherited wasn't really filling up. So in the winter, there wasn't really much life. There weren't animals. There weren't many plants to look at. Just like John was saying earlier about winter interest. I mean, it's nice to have winter interest in the form of birds visiting too, not just thinking about the color of your bark or the shape of the plants, but also who are those plants feeding and who are they sustaining in your garden. And so that was really when I started to think about native plants and got very interested in the topic and started writing a column for the Humane Society magazine. And a publisher about 3 years ago contacted me and asked me if I wanted to write a book based on that column. So that's how that came about.
Now, as you were writing this book, how did this initial concept, did it morph at all, or what did you discover?
Well, the initial concept probably only strengthened as I went along. I did a lot of reading, and I did a lot of interviewing of scientists and horticulturists. And what I kind of came away with was that there are some universal themes in the philosophies and practices of people who are gardening for other species and not just for ourselves. And so then it was a matter of sort of distilling that down into 5 or 6 kind of digestible themes.
Now, the one thing in reading over the book is the complexity of, and other people have called it the web of life that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not merely like we've had people come in, we'll talk about birds, talk about insects, but it's everything is connected.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that is really one of the central points that I really wanted to hit home on in this book, that it's not just about the birds and the butterflies and the bees. There's so many other animals in the landscape contributing to everyone else. So I think we have the habitat creators, like we have bumblebees often use squirrel nests, for example. You know, they use abandoned birdhouses. They nest on the ground in the leaves. But they'll use these other types of habitat that are created by other animals. And some of our native bees, we have 4,000 different species of native bees, and they'll go and use abandoned nests of mud dove or wasps, those organ pipe type nests that you'll find under your deck. Yeah, some of our other little smaller native bees will go and reuse those. And so there's all of these different kind of interactions going on with animals sort of helping each other and nurturing each other's habitat in the landscape. And then in turn, pollinating our plants and, you know, killing our soil, like moles are really good. Gophers are really good at killing the soil. And eating invasive earthworms. And people get very upset with animals like moles because they tunnel through the grass. But, you know, they're actually doing a service, and they have to eat too. And they're not really eating plants. They're often very misunderstood. It's voles that sometimes eat plants, but there are things you can do to mitigate that as well. And so, there's all these different types of mammal species, especially like skunks. In my research, I found that they actually were revered by farmers in the late 1800s, early 1900s, before the era of pesticides, because they use, they eat so many beetle larvae. And so there were farmers who were actually lobbying for skunks protection in the state legislature in New York because they were so helpful to them, to their crops. And those are the kind of things that we've forgotten now about the animals here in our landscape. In addition to just the fact that they have intrinsic value of their own, and who are we to say, oh, I have too many rabbits here. I mean, there's too many humans here too, right? There's too much turf grass.
And yeah.
So, yeah, so it's just about trying to think from other species' perspectives and look at the plants a little differently in terms of who they're helping and who they're feeding besides us.
Well, Nancy, I'm wondering, I mean, I love, we the term we use here is the shaggy garden.
Mm-hmm.
And John, you can jump in now. We like our gardens a little on the shaggy side.
Oh, I prefer it, and especially now, I've made it a point. I'll admit I didn't do this initially when I started gardening, but I make it a point to leave everything up all winter. I don't cut anything down. I don't mess with anything.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it's you know, there's an aesthetic part to it, but one of the things I like more than anything else is to watch the finch come in and feed off of the cone flowers that have been standing all winter.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that every time it happens, I try to grab my daughter real quick and show her. And it's definitely something I've stayed with now. And you can see and you can feel the benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. And also in those plant stocks, if you leave them up year to year, you're going to have bees nesting in there, not only supporting more bees, but some of those birds in the winter, that's where they get some of their food. They'll be getting protein from the larvae and the plant stocks and in the wood. And yeah, so I don't really, I think that there is a shift in terms of people's acceptance of what you call the shaggy landscape. I think the problem for people comes in when they are afraid of what their neighbors will think more than what they inherently believe they should be doing.
Well, I think a shaggy garden in many people's eyes reflects a laziness on the part of the homeowner. And a lot of that is perpetuated through the media, correct?
Exactly. I think there's a lot of that is marketing driven. And it's when I give presentations, I talk a lot about what I call the framework of fear, which is this sort of vocabulary that we have that's sort of driven by the pesticide industry, the pest control industry. These are multi-billion-dollar industries that make us think of holes in leaves as damage, and of dead wood and leaves as messy, and they have a vested interest in trying to encourage us to treat our yards like our living rooms and mow them all down and clean them all up, when really we're taking away so much life in that leaf litter and in those plant stalks and the tree snags.
I can even see in TV shows like that come out of California that they show these lawns and landscapes that my daughter asked one day, where are these neighborhoods where everything looks so perfect? It's not around here. It was just an alien thing to her.
Yes. Well, in Bucks County, where you're in Lambertville, right? That whole area is very beautiful, and there's so much land that's conserved there. I can see why that would look a little weird to her. That's good, though. She has a different sense of normal.
Well, her dad has tried. So we're running out of time, as always happens. I thought we would jump to, I know you're giving a talk this weekend at Bowman's. For someone who has the yard that's nothing but turf and trees, how do you get them to start small, make it manageable, just to start down that path?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really important thing for people to understand, that you don't have to replace everything at once. We all often inherit invasive plants when we get a new house or start a new garden. And if you take it all out without a plan for replacement, you're just going to get more seeded in there. So Just start with a few native wildflowers and a couple of native fruiting shrubs for the birds, and you know, take it one step at a time and replace as you go, and don't rip everything out without a plan, like I said, because you're just going to have to fight that battle again.
Do you address the problem of deer over-browsing in your talks at all? Because that's really a huge factor here.
Yeah, I do, actually. And I have an article that I wrote specifically for that on my website this summer called Gardening for Deer, because I've experimented with this a lot. And what I have found is that when I leave the volunteer trees like sassafras and staghorn sumac and let the dogwood sucker, all those sort of plants that go by underground suckering and roots, they are they're browsed intensively by deer, but they grow really prolifically too. And so if you have things like that that you can nurture in the landscape that actually will come up on their own if you let them, there is a good chance that you'll have more of a buffer to protect some of the, your more cultivated areas from some of that, from some of that nibbling. I mean, I've certainly seen that to be the case here. When we had mostly turf grass, we had more problems than when we have more plants to go around and to share.
Very, very interesting concept. It's basically providing more food rather than, again, fencing is a wonderful thing if you can afford it. I don't know if you have any. I don't have deer fencing.
Yeah, I don't either. I used to have a fence for our dog who died a few years ago. We've since taken most of it down because it was falling down. I don't want wildlife to get caught in it. I do fence in certain trees, you know, when I first plant them and they're small, or when one comes up and it's small and I want to nurture it. But yeah, for the most part, it's impractical here. So I'll do little things like for our Joe Pye weed. The deer love that. So I actually take trimmings of multiflora rose from the woods in the spring, and they just, I put them around the little Joe Pye weeds as they come up. And
oh, wow.
It's enough of a deterrent that they don't really, the deer don't come to eat them.
At that crucial stage. Wow, that's
at
cool.
That crucial stage, they start to eat them, and then I do that, and they go and they find something else.
Okay. Well, Nancy, we've come to the end of the show. Could you give us just a quick details on the whens and wheres for your talk this weekend?
Yes, it's going to be at Bowman's Hill, and it'll be, I believe, at 2 o'clock. And it's is going to be an hour-long presentation and then a book signing.
Awesome, awesome. There's a Facebook page for Bowman's Wildflower Preserve that it's there on. So I may be there, actually. It would be nice to meet you in person.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, I'd love to meet you.
And I encourage all you listeners out there, it would be a nice thing. It certainly won't be gardening this weekend. So, Nancy, we have to sign off. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And break a leg this weekend.
Thanks.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Nancy Lawson. She's going to be speaking at Bowman's this weekend. Are you going to be there, John?
I'm going to do my best to get there, yes.
So, yeah, I might try to be there. Okay, everyone, thank you for listening to Into the Garden. Next week we have the Sprout brothers, Ari and Noah Meyerowitz from Great Barrington, talking about all things sprouts. Honey, you know what to do.